Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking once again with the great journalist, activist, and now candidate for the United States Congress, my friend Sam Husseini. Sam has been tossed out of more fancy events than most of us have ever attended, including, I believe, a Trump-Putin meeting at a palace in Finland, a U.S. State Department briefing, recently a Chuck Schumer speech at the National Press Club. So we will talk about getting kicked out of things and getting into things and what the name of this country should be, among other topics. You can find Sam Husseini at Husseini.substack.com. Sam Husseini, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much, David. Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
So some of these things that I say you're getting kicked out of is as penalty for trying to behave as an actual journalist, right? This is not as a vandal or something. This is in places where actual journalism is frowned upon, like the National Press Club, right?
Yeah, the latest thing is I confronted Schumer late last month, trying to ask him. He spoke at an event about corruption, talking about corruption.
He knows it well.
Basically, his talking point is Trump is bad. Trump is bad. Did you hear that Trump is bad? And so I stood up and I found out that they weren't going to take any questions at this event sponsored by Public Citizen, one of these groups that kind of started good, but has become kind of an appendage of the Democratic Party. So I stood up and said, what's more corrupt than backing genocide? And I just, laid into that. And he tried to shut me up and I wouldn't shut up. And then they led me out the door and I went out the door. And now the press club is trying to pretend that I'm some sort of security threat. It's sort of like the terrorism pretext paranoia, directed in microcosm, and they banned me from the press club for the time being. So I think, I'm trying to take that on in some way. I think my attitude towards news conferences is that the tougher the questions are in the news conference and the more intellectual friction there is, the more peaceful the outside world. Because if everybody's schmoozing and getting along with somebody who's committing war crimes or complicit in war crimes, then that's just ensuring that there will be more mayhem and slaughter in the real world. And that's exactly what I'm trying to stop.
Well, I happen to think Public Citizen still does a lot of great work. I may be wrong, but I don't know why they would do an event with Chuck Schumer, much less one where he gets to run his mouth and there are no questions. What would be the point of that? I'm not sure.
I'm sure they do some good work, but I think that in many ways that a lot of DC groups are like that. But yeah,
it's a problem. And so now you've been a journalist for a long time. Now you want to be the sort of person that the journalists go and ask difficult questions of, or in some cases, easy schmoozy questions of, and that is a Congress member. Talk about that. What do you want to be a Congress member for, and can you be, and from where, and replacing who, et cetera?
I think that it would be an important thing to get Glenn Ivey, who's the person in this District 4 in Maryland. He got in on a flood of AIPAC money in 2022, displacing Donna Edwards, who was sort of, a fairly progressive Democrat. And he's generally a corporate Democrat, sort of what's called a centrist or new Democrat in the Clinton mold. And I want to, so often elections are movement killers, and I want this campaign to be a movement enabler. This district just outside of Washington, D.C. is so often in the shadow of official Washington, and I want the people in the district to be able to cast their conscience as a shadow onto official Washington to reverse that. So I'm trying to activate the district, challenge the district, challenge myself to form deeper connections with my neighbors, rather than just simply, be pounding away against official Washington on by my lonesome, which it's most of what I've done.
Yeah, and do you have a campaign website and platform people can go look and volunteer and get involved?
Absolutely. SamHusseini.com is the campaign website, SamHusseini.com, and people can plug in and volunteer. There are several articles already up, and we'll come out with a more comprehensive issues breakdown as well. And I'm really hoping that this will be an activist-oriented campaign. Certainly with door knocking and other things, but I'm also hoping to create PDFs that people can pass out, to sort of take back the public square and actually get people, off their phones and engaged and talking to each other wherever they can, including, in strategic locations. There's a major military base in the district. There's lots of healthcare facilities or health insurance facilities in the district. NASA has a facility in the district. So I'm going to try to really, and I'm going to try to activate a lot of the students at the University of Maryland. College Park is the biggest, population density
Yeah.
here in Prince George's County.
And what party are you running within?
I'm the Green Party here in Maryland is quite o well organized, and they did a lot of legwork and got on the ballot. So I got a phone call from a Green Party person about every 2 weeks for the last several months, saying, "Sam, we got a ballot line. Come on, do this. We got a ballot line. Come on, do this." And a lot of good candidates, our mutual friend Matthew Ho spent, he ran for Senate several years ago, and he spent most of his time trying to make sure that he got on the ballot.
Right.
So here it was, just handed to me on a silver platter so that I can focus on the next stages of a campaign. So that's what I'm doing.
So you're the nominee. Was there a primary or some process?
I was the nominee, and I accepted the nomination just recently. So it's a go. It'll be on November 3rd. It will be Glen Ivey, the APAC-enabled dependent Democrat, a Republican who ran in 2024 and lost to Glen Ivey by about 90-10. So he has no chance. And myself on the Green Party platform. Libertarians aren't on the ballot here.
Wow. So you could take 40% and the other guy still wins with 50%, but you could take 50% and win, and there's not the usual, oh, you're gonna spoil it and the Republican will win danger, or it's microscopic compared to, a split district, right?
Exactly. I objectively have a much better chance of winning than the Republican does, even though it's a tough district in some ways. No, I could find no record of anybody who wasn't a Democrat or a Republican getting more than 2.5% in the district. Bernie Sanders did not do well here either in 2016 or 2020. It's a, by conventional metrics, it is a solid blue, but establishment leaning district. And part of the reason I'm running is that it's a very important district, being right outside of DC, and I want to change that.
And getting on the ballot is wonderful, but getting in the corporate media, getting in the debates, if there are debates organized by the two establishment parties, these sorts of things are questions as well, right?
Absolutely. It's very unlikely that there'll be debates this time around, although one of the things that the Green Party is doing very strategically is trying to lay the groundwork for Maryland public television, ensuring that there are debates in the future in various races, and basically mandating that, and mandating that everybody on the ballot gets on the debate stage. So this does fit into a broader reform effort that the Green Party of Maryland has successfully outlined.
I'm continuously amazed. I look at campaign websites of candidates for Congress across the United States year after year, and the vast majority of them make no mention of the topic that takes some 60% of the money they want the job of overseeing, that is foreign policy. They just don't bother to mention it. Or it's one sentence at the bottom of, 100 pages of domestic topics, which are some important topics. But I suspect that your website won't have that failure. I've also never, ever found a single candidate who has proposed what they think the federal budget should look like, more or less, like what percentage should go to what, or even admitting, what percentage currently goes to what, which nobody knows, but nobody likes when they find out. And so every candidate that I've had on this program, I've asked them if they would be the first to
I'll be the
suggest.
first. I'll be the first, David.
Glad to hear it.
I'm so delighted to come onto your show, David, because I mean, you ask me tough questions in a very friendly way, and you call me on my rhetoric. We'll get to the name of the country later on, and I will be,
Well, I like your proposal for the name of a country. I'm not calling you out on it. I like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you challenged me to write about it rather than just kind of mention it. So to really put my shoulder to the wheel on it. Yeah.
We are speaking with Sam Husseini. You can find him at samhusseini.com, if that's right, and husseini.substack.com. But why don't we go to that topic, Sam? Because this is actually a problem for a lot of progressive or leftist or humanitarian or decent people who care and travel maybe a little bit and notice that it's still kind of offensive and has been for many, many years to call a pair of continent the name for a pair of continents the name of one little country is America. And the other option, United States, doesn't really have adjectives. A USian doesn't really catch on very well. And so everybody ends up saying Americans, I'm an American. Well, what about an Argentinian or a Colombian? Are they American? And you have another idea, or a certain late architect has another idea, right?
I can't claim or authorship of this, and it actually predates him. But Frank Lloyd Wright, 100 years ago, attempted to popularize the term Usonian. For the origins of it, it was originally Usona, which United States of North America, and then the I was added for poetic reasons, as well as to represent the word independent. Presumably independent of England. So you have Frank Lloyd Wright talking about Usonian architecture, Usonian culture, wanting the United States to not be simply an appendage of imperial Europe, and speaking out against imperialism very emphatically as well. He's one of these people, I think you put it as he's been turned into a Santa Claus figure. Rather than people actually reading his writing, he was a pacifist. He was against all wars and spoke about how one war always has its intestines, the next war, and so on and so on. So that is something that I think can really affect. And I recently learned, it was fascinating. Malcolm X, some people quote him as saying, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, but then he says, I'm not an American, and I got sense enough to know it. And when he set up his organization of Afro American Unity, there are quotes of him saying, when I say Afro American, I don't just mean people in the United States. I mean Black descendants throughout the hemisphere. So he understood the exact same point there.
It I the Trump administration has openly embraced the Monroe Doctrine, and if you go back and look at the people who created this thing, by no means did they think the United States was going to stop in North America. Like if the name if the name included North America, that wasn't going to be good enough because they wanted at least Central, if not South America too, and the Caribbean, right? On the other hand, there are still countries in North America, if you count Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean, that aren't the United States. Still, it would be a unique name. Usonian would clearly indicate one particular country. Nobody else wants that name. And I think it's a good one. And it has all the forms of speech, and people could use it if they wanted to, right?
Right. And I think it speaks to the transformation of national character that the United States of America desperately needs, that we need to shift away from being an empire and being towards a meaningful democracy. And I think it will help enable that. And the current mantra of America 250 years and all of that exactly goes against that. And I think that that's what needs to why it needs to be confronted. I actually wrote a piece, partly inspired by our conversations on New Year's Day at the beginning of this year, saying, Make America Usonia.
Yeah, and there's another one you've got on your Substack called "The American Empire's Big Lie versus the Usonian Republic," a
To
republic
try
instead of
to.
an empire.
Exactly. Yeah, but that actually abides by the law, for example, including international law, including domestic law, etc.
Yeah, very interesting that this past weekend the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, passed a resolution to uphold the Leahy Law, one of the many laws violated by every weapons shipment abroad, including to Israel, but to every other country that weapons are shipped to. And now what? Do members of that party in Congress uphold that law because it's the policy of their party to uphold that law, also to abolish ICE? Do they now take actual concrete steps to abolish
Right.
ICE because the party passed a resolution? I think not without public pressure, right?
Absolutely. I think so much of what we see is performative. We've seen that, like APAC Ivy, my Democratic Party opponent in this district, lately has been voting more reasonably. He voted against the NDAA recently, which had measures to merge the U.S.-Israeli militaries even further, as well as to fund the military to over $1 trillion per year now. He knows he's not going to stop it, right? He knows that he can vote against something because it's part of a calculation that AIPAC and the military-industrial complex didn't need his vote for that those measures to proceed through the House. So I am concerned that there is a large-scale effort to rebrand parts of the Democratic Party as somehow good on these issues when you really scrutinize it, it could just simply be performative. And I should say the Republican Party engages in this kind of thing in different ways as well.
Well, they could oppose all future votes on U.S. weapons shipments to Israel, and there could be no more future votes because of the merging of the two
Right.
militaries in this bill. That they got six Democrats to vote for it. That was enough. Why get more? This is a problem. What do you make of the other campaigns and primaries going on, and people winning, and people who seem a little bit better than average winning, and the establishment panicking? You've written about Zoran Mamdani recently. What do you make of some of the people winning elections?
I want to make sure that it's not purely symbolic. I think we've seen this dynamic where a political figure sort of rides on the coattails of a movement. Most obviously, Obama got into office in the aftermath of all of the movements against the Iraq War, for example. But we've seen this pattern over and over where a politician goes in, gets into office because of a movement, and then the movement dissipates. And the political figure retrenches the establishment, and then the establishment gears up for the next series of criminal activities. And I want to help break that cycle to the extent that I can. I want this campaign to enable movements to better challenge the prerogatives of militaristic empire that dominate our life, especially regarding Israel's genocide, but going far beyond that. The establishment is outright saying that they want a new imperialism. Eric Prince gave a major speech along those lines, and it was followed by speeches by Rubio and Trump along similar lines. They are outright saying that they want a juiced up imperialism, and that will be obviously devastating to Africa, Latin America, and parts of Asia.
Obviously, Mamdani is a mayor of a city, not in Congress, but he seems to be at least trying to keep promises on things like preschool and housing and buses and maybe even taxes. But when it comes to police are good now. That was all a mistake of one's youth. And arresting Netanyahu is just not what you really do once you're in office and so forth, right?
I would agree with all that characterization, and I'd just add that regarding police, he's kept Tish as the police commissioner, who's an ardent Zionist and militarist, and has strengthened ties between the New York police and the Israeli big tech firms, surveillance and so on. And we have a broader problem of militarization of U.S. police, often trained by Israeli military. So that's a huge issue. And his statement, I think, may well have been inaccurate in claiming that he had no recourse to go after Netanyahu. And I would also highlight the timing of it. In a lot of my journalism, I note that timing of events is often even more important than the actual event. And he made that statement just as the fight about the NDAA was going on. So it sort of made people take their eyes off the ball at a critical time. And I don't know if his hand was forced or if that was intentional or something, but that was, I felt, very detrimental to the forces of progress.
Well, it's not over, right? The NDAA, the massive military spending bill, has not passed the Senate. We'll still need more votes
Correct.
in both houses to actually go to the president, right? So we should be pushing people on this hard. And most House members and senators are back in their districts and states for some weeks now, right?
Absolutely. It should be a fulcrum of people agitating and getting in the faces and asking tough questions and getting into rooms that might be hard to get into. And then, I try to do what I can. And I try to inspire other people of saying, get into a space and ask the tough question, and don't wait around that, I'm going to schmooze this person and maybe 3 years from now they'll do the right thing. No, in a very factual way, confront them with the things that are pertinent and at hand.
I want to mention the recent interview with AOC, who nobody wants to say a word against because she might be the least bad candidate for emperor out there. But I could still say she was the least bad candidate for emperor and say honest things about her. I'm not sure why the two must conflict. And it seems to me this notion that some of these people used to say defund the police, defund the prisons, and now they won't, and those were mistakes of their youth and so forth, is often depicted as older and wiser strategy. It's not good strategy to say defund the police. I mean, I'm not gonna make a big case for a slogan. I don't care what your slogan is, but I actually that the reason people said that was because reform the police, fix the police, and these sorts of things were making the police ever worse and giving them ever bigger budgets. And the trainers and the fixers were the problem. So it actually made sense to me to try to defund the police. What is your take?
I mean, I've sometimes worked with people who put things in a slightly different frame, talking about community control over the police. So you would think that if Mamdani is going to refine his stance, that he would at least fall back on that. And another aspect of this is what we mean by police, right? The whole mantra is about street crime. What about corporate crime? What about crimes committed in aggressive wars, and so on. So when we talk about criminality, I think it should be framed in those terms as well. Far, far more, if you read Corporate Crime Reporter, for example, far more people are killed and injured by corporate crime than street crime. And I would add a similar framing to the question of socialism. That is, we have a socialism for the wealthy now. Military contractors, fossil fuel companies, nuclear energy, and other companies, big tech, and so on, all get these various forms of government subsidy, and that's effectively socialism for the rich. And instead, said we have rugged individualism for the rest of us, and I think that needs to be challenged in those terms as well.
I think that's probably the most important point, and I couldn't agree more. But I do think even Mamdani, even before he got elected, was talking about instead of defund the police, fund these other things that take things away from the police, fund mental health experts and doctors and conflict de-escalators and other people you can send to things that we now send armed troops to that we don't need to. But if you're going to fund all of those things, and maintain the same funding for the police, you know, what are the police doing with all that money? It doesn't, it's something doesn't add up, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. Stuff that definitely doesn't add up, and I'm sure that there's an amount. I mean, I know the police force here in Maryland, or where I'm at, I think that there's an enormous amount of corruption and waste in that.
We've just got about 2 minutes left, Sam Husseini. I'd love to know something about the artwork behind you, as well as how people can get in touch and keep up with your work.
Thank you so much. My artwork, I made it, and it's largely nature-based. It's made from fauna and flora and snow and other things. People can look at my artwork at bethatempty.org. It's a line from a Rumi poem. And they can take a look at the campaign and find out more about my background and what we're trying to do with the campaign at samhusseini.com. There's resources for volunteering and so on, as well as donating. But as I really want to emphasize, we are trying to make this a campaign that further enables real concrete activism rather than something that detracts from those efforts.
That would be a wonderful model for several thousand campaigns out there that I can think of. So if you want the visual arts, go to bethatempty.org. If you want to read words, go to husseini.substack.com. And if you want a campaign that generates activism, go to samhusseini.com. Sam Husseini, thanks for everything you're doing and for talking with us on Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much for all you do, David.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.